Hey guys, welcome back to another edition of the Detour Live. It's a special edition today because we're going to be talking about a really important foundation that is obviously the Amy Gillett Foundation. We're going to be chatting with Katie Brown, Iffy, who's a stakeholder and campaigns manager at the Amy Gillett Foundation. And we're going to be also chatting with her brother, Graham Brown. We're going to be chatting with Lee Howard, who's going over to Tokyo. We've got an excerpt from the social distance potty with George Bennett talking about the road race. And, of course, rounding out with Scotty McGrory, who's done Olympic preparations. And he sounded crisp, Iffy. Like, he sounded like he's really on the job.
About time.
Yeah. Now let's get straight in because we've got a lot to get through on today's show. And what can you tell us about Katie Brown, Iffy?
Katie, she's a superstar. She was a top cyclist in her own right. And of course, she's ridden the Bay Crit. So there you go.
You had to sit.
But of course, Katie was one of the girls who was involved in that tragic praying. There's Wazza, the big fella in the middle, and there's all the girls who were involved in that terrible day. And, of course, on the far right is Amy herself, who tragically was killed. And there is Katie, is Kate Nichols, Alexis Rose, Louise Yaxley and Lorianne Graham, the girls who all got cleaned up by a young girl who had just learnt to drive. Not very well by the sounds of it. So, as you know, it was back in 2005. We were, Dan, you were with me over on the tour. We were doing our thing as we do, and we weren't far from the German border, and it sort of felt like we were quite close, probably 500 kilometres away from that tragedy, but it rocked us all and the whole world of cycling when it happened.
Well, why don't we play? We showed it in the Detour de France documentary, as you said, back in 2005. We were there, but the film came out in 2006. But we did mention what happened with Amy Gillett, and it happened to fall on the same day, 10 years on from the anniversary of Fabio Casatelli when he had his accident. So let's play the excerpt from Detour de France, and then we'll bring Katie on for a chat.
The Australian women's cycling team was on a routine training ride through East Germany when an out-of-control car ploughed into them at high speed. 29-year-old Amy Gillett was killed on impact. Her five teammates also injured, one critically.
Today has certainly been a very sad day for Australian cycling. The tragedy that occurred overnight in Germany is hit the cycling community very hard.
I extend my condolences and sincere thoughts to all of those who've been affected by it.
The squad had been there for just 24 hours, preparing for a race on the European circuit, the course south of the eastern city of Leipzig, now a crash scene.
Yeah, I got a call at 3 o'clock one morning from Simon Townley. I'd been in bed too long to tell me the tragic news that the Australian cycling and cycling team had been involved in a terrible accident with a car, and that young Amy Gillett, safe, had been tragically killed, and that two of the other girls were critical. Just thank God that they managed to pull through. But, it was a terrible time. I couldn't get back to sleep, of course. And then the next morning, as everyone started to find out about it, to keep reliving it, talking about it, it was just a terrible day.
The motorist involved in the head-on collision, an 18-year-old woman who gained her licence just 4 weeks ago. Amy Gillett, a former Olympic rower, had the world at her feet.
When the news came through that morning, it struck everybody, not just English-speaking or Australian people on the tour, it struck everybody. I remember I got the call early in the morning, there was already a number of missed messages, and the story was I had to go and get reaction. You didn't need to give words. You could see on the faces of the Aussie guys here on the tour that they'd heard and they knew it. And they knew the girls. And you knew then they had to still race another stage of the tour. And one thing that really struck me was there was two ways they could approach it. They could justifiably not wish to race. One would understand that because I knew these girls very well. All they could race with the spirit and aggression and the aggression that Aussie riders are known for, and that's what they did. And I don't believe it was any coincidence at all that from that awful tragic news, suddenly we saw Aussie riders in every break. It was one of the greatest displays of spirit I've seen from Australian cyclists ever.
He is going for the win. It's going to be a very long solo for him to do it, because from the summit of this lap, Phil, I don't think I've ever seen Cadel Evans' face look like that. It is screwed up in pain and determination.
The Tour is by far and away the hardest race I've ever done. The most amount of suffering I've ever been through, and I've done some pretty hard events. It's hard, hard, hard.
Our hearts and our love go out to all the families. I know that that we were thinking about them. I mean, if you consider it didn't happen so far from here, but their loss is really out and weighing heavily on us, and everybody in the peloton, because we know that every time we go out, the same thing could happen to us. So tough loss, and we feel for them.
Katie joins us now. Katie, thanks for joining the Detour. We really appreciate you coming on. We've obviously just seen the package from the Detour de France, and it doesn't get any easier to watch things like that even after 16 years. How difficult has the process been for you over time to really just move forward in a positive way? Obviously what's happened with the foundation since has been huge, but obviously Amy's memory and that experience will never really get easier.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a frog in my throat from watching that, actually. I'm kind of, let me recoup a little bit. So sorry about that. So for me, personally, it was quite a difficult period. I did spend a little bit of time sort of trying to figure out which direction to go in or how my life would pan out. I'm very, very fortunate that I have an amazing network around me of people that put time and effort into sort of making everything so it was okay. And I think that's where we need to sort of take a step back and just realise that, you know, it does last. There's sort of elements of it that does last a lifetime. And if we have that network around us, so our peer support groups around us, then we can push through. And I'm really fortunate that I have pushed through. I've been really lucky to be able to have three kids, which they said that I would never be able to have children. So I have a 12-year-old son and identical twin girls that are 10, and I struggled to carry them in, like, while they were in utero from the accident, and they were really ill. And then we spent a lot of time in the hospital from that. So I was dealing with a multiple sort of roll-on effects from it. But from there, I kind of found my way in the philanthropy area, which sort of allowed me to raise vital funds for sick kids. And then I've been fortunate enough to, when I met Dan last year, that we discussed sort of coming over, and I sort of joined the Amy Gillett Foundation in May this year. So I've been there 2 months.
That's fantastic, Katie. Just to go back a little bit, I won't go any longer on that, but I don't know whether people realise just how badly you were injured with your leg. I can remember 2 days after them, someone ringing me and saying, you know what, they're going to have to take Katie's leg. That's how bad it was. They thought that you were going to have to lose a leg. So it's just amazing you've been able to recover from that.
Yeah, it was quite as you can imagine, it was quite an experience, and an emotional experience, I guess you could say. I was really fortunate in a way that in Germany there was quite a few bystanders that could help. I mean, I know this sounds ridiculous now, but my left leg was up underneath my right armpit, and the only reason that they didn't take my leg at the time was because one of the gentlemen that was holding my drip had stood on my toe, and I was like, oh my God, you're literally killing me, like, get off my foot. So the doctor on scene knew that there was still sort of nerves attached, and so they didn't amputate it on site, which they were going to, and sort of took me straight into the hospital and really sort of worked hard to save it. So I'm really fortunate that I've still got that leg, and I count my lucky stars, really.
You've obviously always been someone that's been driven, being a former professional athlete, and you know, you it must be about, you know, goal setting and so forth. And what was really impressive for a lot of people is just how, you know, strong your resilience was, and your drive and your focus. How important was that mindset to get through such a traumatic event like that?
That's a really good question, actually. I guess as an athlete, we're trained to, figure out our problems and then work on the issue to resolve our problem and become better. So it's positive thinking is always a really good starting point. But I mean, it does take work. It's not just something that you can kind of switch on and switch off. It's a lot of work, a lot of years of sort of really self-assessing and seeing how to move through things and sort of taking that journey with yourself, and allowing yourself to be on a journey is the most important factor.
I think one of the things that is really scary when it comes to the mental health side of things with any sort of trauma, you know, people often talk about post-traumatic stress disorder. I personally have experience with that. I was first on the scene of a car accident in 2003. And, you know, it was just such a traumatic thing to go through. Basically, I was just out with friends, and it was 3 a.m. and someone was hit by a car at 160 km/h. Guys were drunk, drag racing. And I was designated driver, and I was first on the scene, and my brain blacked out for 20 minutes of that. I couldn't remember any of it, like walking over to, you know, the girl who passed away. And I remember afterwards, I was only 22 at the time, and I didn't know how to deal with it. Like, I just thought, you know, I'll just keep soldiering on. I was a positive person. That'd be fine. But the scary part was realizing that for 15 years, I carried this hidden sort of, you know, black dog or baggage that, you know, and it would be triggered by things that, you know, you'd see something on TV and it'd trigger something, and you'd feel like shit for 2 weeks, or you'd take it out on friends or family, or, you know, a lot of things made sense once you could deal with it. Is one of the hardest things through a traumatic incident like that, the effect that it not only has on yourself, but your connected family, your friends, and being able to deal through like the mental process of getting better?
Yeah, I mean, the AGF at the moment, we're really sort of looking towards the future and how we can kind of work with governments to be able to support this kind of process. There are road trauma support groups in the actual governments in Victoria and some states across Australia. And it's a really big issue, actually, and mental health is a really big issue in itself. And so that's where I said earlier, you know, finding a peer or finding someone that you can talk to is one of the first steps that you can take to sort of helping yourself, because there's so many elements that can come with being involved in a crash and having that trauma. And so you need to have that support network.
If you were around in the early days when the Amy Gillip Foundation was created, and it's another way you can slip in the Bay Crits because you did the Amy's ride. But I mean, how special has it been, the fact that from such a tragic event, there is a legacy now that is all about, you know, helping driver safety not just in Australia, but these messages can resonate around the world. And tragically, we saw the story last week of the 13-year-old kid in Colombia who was the big Egan Bernal fan, and he was killed out on his bike. We had Jason Lowndes a couple of years ago in Bendigo. There's so many stories, and so many people that are watching this would have a story that's connected with it. But how important has that legacy been, Iffy?
Well, the Amy Gilley Foundation has been an amazing organisation. I remember I got back from Europe just the day before the funeral. So I went to the funeral and was talking with Simon Gillett afterwards. And already he had in his mind that he wanted to do something under Amy's name moving forward to help to raise funds for cycling awareness and safety. And then the following week we caught up and I just said, look, well, we're doing a ride, like a charity ride as part of the Bay Crits in January. I'd love to do it and raise funds for the Amy Gillett. So that became the first Amy Gillett ride, which and I was sort of on the original group that formed the Amy Gillett Foundation, where we sit down at our first meeting. So I feel very much a part of it. Yeah, and they've done some wonderful work. So I was really keen to it's actually Katie who came to me and said, I'd like to get a platform to tell people what they want to do, the call to action, really, for cycling. So here's your chance, Katie.
Thanks. I mean, the Amy Gillett Foundation has a legacy of its own. Amy has her own legacy as well, obviously being an amazing athlete, an amazing student. She was studying a PhD, and so she's just in herself, she has her own legacy. And there was obviously six of us in that accident and five of us are still here. And so to acknowledge that there are five still remaining is a really important factor as well. So, but moving from that, the AGF has done amazing work. And so we are really sort of targeting research, education and advocacy, trying to change a behavioural sort of concept, letting out everyone sort of work together to create that safer road for everybody, not just for cyclists, but for families like kids and the commuters to work. What we're trying to do is actually create roads for everybody and a safer road for everybody.
I was just going to say, you look at some of the other countries, like in Europe, places around, you know, Belgium, Denmark, Holland. It's just such an accepted thing that there's infrastructure for cyclists. But it always seems like it's the same narrative here back in Australia, like, you know, they hog the roads and, you know, they should get licenses and all that sort of stuff. Is the biggest battle trying to change the perception with cyclists and motorists?
Absolutely. I mean, we're lucky at the moment. We're doing some amazing pilot work where we're looking at separated bike lanes within one of the major cities in Australia. So we're not ready to launch that yet, but that's in the pipeline. So it's definitely on the cards. The separated bike lanes really makes a difference. And as you said, you know, the Netherlands and Belgium, they've got that infrastructure, which makes it so much easier, and everybody can ride, and everyone's happier as well because no one's sort of antagonising each other. But when we're talking about behaviour as well, we really need to consider living by example. So we've got this policy where, well, not policy, but we have this quotation where it's that four C's. So you be calm, you be courteous, you be considerate, and you be conscientious. So if you can live by those, and if anything occurs while you're riding, even if you're driving, you can live by them. It's just very simple.
Oh, for sure.
just saying, but what the foundation has done over the years is sensational. The Meter Matters campaign took a long while to get Victoria across the line, but you did so in the end. So yes. it's right around Australia now, which is a brilliant campaign. And I just wanted to say one of the beautiful things of those early days was catching up with Amy's mum and dad, Dennis and Mary, most gorgeous people, who have been real great campaigners and love riding their bike themselves. So I haven't seen them in a couple of years, but I hope they're really well.
They are. They're doing really well. I just recently saw them for our annual giving day, which was in May, and I mean, they're such great ambassadors for the Amy Gillett Foundation. It's phenomenal. I mean, Mary is so passionate, obviously, for obvious reasons, but Dennis as well. I mean, they've done such great things for the foundation, and, you know, we can't thank them enough.
Since they've made it law with the Meter Matters, have you seen statistics that have said that it is actually working?
So the next part of the Meter Matter campaign is obviously to try and enforce that. But where enforcement comes, we really need to consider, as I said, those four C's. So being able to live by those four C's helps the enforcement happen. So if we could, the next sort of phase of moving into that Meter Matters and actually activating the enforcement side of things, let's take it back a notch a little bit and just say, hey, everybody, why don't we be calm when we're either riding or driving? Again, be courteous, be considerate, and be conscientious. It's not that difficult.
It's the old treat people the way you want to be treated.
Yeah. Correct.
But I think it's really important that we get across to everyone, it's not an us and them situation. It never has been. Yeah. Every cyclist I know drives a car anyway, my favourite bumper sticker, I'm going to get it made. It's going to say the next cyclist you see could be someone you care about, because that's what people are going to think. That could be not just my son or my daughter or their friend or a friend's friend, but there could be someone you care about. So that's got to be what in your mind. Yeah.
We are something to someone. Everybody is something to someone. It doesn't matter if we're a wife or a daughter, we are still something to someone. And that's what everyone needs to kind of consider.
Yeah.
Exactly. I guess one thing that would piss the foundation off though is there's always a rotten apple that spoils a bunch. And it is cyclists doing the wrong thing. You know, cyclists that run reds, cyclists that, you know, don't adhere to the, you know, two abreast on the road or whatever, or clog up, you know, beach road at times that, you know, drivers see that and they go, see, you know, they're not obeying the rules or whatever. Like, on the flip side,
that's the wrong C, the wrong C, mate.
Yeah, that's right. But at the same time, it's like for cyclists, you know, do the right thing, because, you know, you don't want to be that guy that spoils the great work that the majority of people out on the road are doing.
It is a very cantankerous issue. That's correct. But again, if I could just say, if we could all just live by these sort of simple rules that will help us keep the roads safer for everybody, because everybody deserves to get home safely. So, I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. Everyone deserves to get home safely. They don't deserve to be hit by a car or be doored or anything along those lines, because when that happens, the cyclist lives with the trauma, but so does the driver. The driver lives with the trauma as well. So we need to kind of really sort of scale it back.
Yeah, I agree.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, very soon we're going to have your brother Graham, dual Olympic gold medalist, on, and Lee Howard is popping in. He's about to take off, and he's hoping to do what Graham did back in 2004. But before they do jump on, I just thought, Katie, you might like to talk about some of the a call to action that you're planning moving forward with the foundation.
Yeah, so the Amy Gillett Foundation, obviously, we run purely from donations. We don't have government funding, so we would love supporters to just jump online and jump onto the Amy Gillett website. So you've got it on the screen. There you go, amygillett.org.au. You're pre-organized.
Oh, we're good. We're real good.
Amazing. that's where we really need the support of the community. We need the support of the cyclist community, the family community, the whole of Australia. we need the support from. So if that's the case, we would love to hear from everybody. We are advocating for safer roads. That is what we're advocating for. So we would like to get to a point where we have zero deaths. And so without the support of others or from the community, we it's a really hard task.
John, you're on the screen, mate. Get off your phone.
Sorry, mate.
Stuart McIntosh says...
I was answering Brownie's text, all right?
Good.
Stuart McIntosh. Leave you alone. Just say, wait until she's off.
Stuart McIntosh says, fantastic to hear Katie's inspirational story. You're a true unsung hero. You've done so much in your life, both pre and post the accident, to help others. I hope more people to get to hear your story. Tom Maloney says, Tracy Gaudry strongly headed up the foundation in its early days. It's obvious Katie has the passion, background to take it on and make it work. How important was Tracy Gaudry's influence with the foundation, particularly in the early days?
Yeah, so I didn't have a lot to do when Tracy was around because I was kind of having my children and going through a few things of my own. So I understand that Tracy did some amazing things, and Tracy's an amazing person in herself. Like, she was on the she headed up the UCI, so her knowledge and understanding of what needs to happen really pushed the foundation forward.
Ian Thomas says, love the four C's. Let's get that out there. Tom Maloney says, in our motor-dominated society, unfortunately, we accept a certain amount of death and injury to facilitate the journey from A to B. Couldn't agree more, Katie. We all have, I think he got cut off typing the rest of his sentence there. Tony Dean, why is it so popular to wear black helmet, black jersey and ride a black bike and match the colour of the road? Even just a fluoro helmet goes a long way to catching the attention of motorists. Are they good little sort of tips, you know, to try and prevent, you know, accidents or potential accidents from happening?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really good comment. So it's really important that we stay visual. Like, if you're riding and you're riding at dusk and you're wearing a light coloured outfit, so if you're wearing a dark sort of grey coloured shirt or a dark coloured shirt, you're going to look like the road. You really will look like the road. So motorists won't be able to see you. So if you can wear light colours, have your flashing lights front and rear, and just be conscious in what you're actually wearing and how you're presenting yourself while on the road, and then it kind of reduces the, I don't even know what the word I'm looking for.
Potential for something bad to happen.
That's it. Exactly. Yeah, because we're actually making ourselves visible. And if we can add high vis to it or have a reflective strip on one of our moving body parts, like around our ankle, so if we have a reflective strip around our sock and it's moving, when the light hits that, it's a constantly moving, reflecting item. So that is a really important area as well. So if we can just stay vigilant on, and before we leave, knowing what time we're going to come back, or when, if we're coming back at dusk, or if we're riding home from work, when we're commuting, maybe just strap on one of a reflective strip around your sock or around your pants, so then you are visible to everybody.
Yeah. Hey, one of the biggest challenges, I was just going to say, is that mobile phones and all the social media, yeah, that is the biggest challenge now. People are forever, even though they're not supposed to be there, they're sending messages, doing the social media, and I reckon more accidents than not are caused by that. And so if you can ride on a road that's got a cycling
separated section, bike lane,
separated bike lane, or any road that's got a little bit of side, then do it, because if you've got to rely on cars to go around you, sooner or later one won't. That's my motto. Mm.
Yeah. Hey,
separated bike lanes are really important. Oh, sorry, Dan.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, on a lighter note, what was it like growing up in the same household as Graham? Was he a pain in the ass? Were you super competitive, both being in cyclists?
He is 4 years older than me, so... I don't know how I should answer that one.
it's a detour. We want dirt. Give us some dirt.
I have to say, he is a really great brother. I mean, he actually coached me to my first national championship. So without him, I think, I don't know, I may not be the athlete I was. but he's a complicated person, and so am I. So if you could imagine the two of us living in the same house, then yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, should we give Graham the right of reply? And we've got Lee Howard in the wings as well.
Oh, bring him on, mate.
Let's bring him on. There we go. Fellas, welcome to the detour. We've got Lee Howard, who's about to jet off to Tokyo to go for dual gold, and a man that's already won dual gold medals at the Olympics, Graham Brown. Guys, why don't we just kick things off with Graham? What advice have you got for Lee Howard to emulate your feats of 2004?
Be the first one to cross the finish line. it's quite simple, really. Do the fastest time in the team's pursuit and make sure you get the most points in the Madison. Yeah, I think Lee knows what he needs to do. He's on the right track. I've been I chat with the boys every now and then and make sure, just keep up to date with what's going on. And from everything I hear, they're going really well, like exceptionally well, actually. So fingers crossed they can, do what we did in Athens.
Good advice, Lee.
Hi, that doesn't help me a lot. Doesn't help me a lot in there. it's simple when you make it sound like that, Brownie. But yeah, I'll be going for the two that you got. Was it 8, 11? How many years ago was it now, mate? 2004 Athens?
Couple. Three or four.
Couple cycles ago. Yeah. Nah, fingers crossed. Like you said, everything's going well for us. Everything's on the right track. So, yeah, we'll do our best, that's for sure.
Hey, Lee, I can't believe that this is...
I reckon it's a bit tougher than when Brownie only had to beat the Poms. Now you've got to beat the Poms, the Italians, the Danes, the Kiwis and the Swiss. It's a bit tougher.
Oh, mate, yeah, there's a good lineup. There is a really good lineup. And, it's certainly changed. The training between Team Pursuit and Madison now is pretty different. The training we have to do for a Team Pursuit certainly doesn't help us in a 50K Madison, that's for sure. But, we'll do what we can. The focus is the Team Pursuit, and the Madison's is a bonus. We'll do what we can. We certainly haven't put all of our focus onto the Madison, but we have a good team with Kel O'Brien and myself, so we'll do what we can.
Hey, Lee, I can't believe this is your first Olympics, mate. How long ago did you go, right, this is it, I'm going for the Olympics, and how's the journey been to get to this point?
It's been an interesting road. 2008 was when I first, well, actually, it was my first Worlds, and Brownie, you were there. And I don't know if I've got time for a couple of the stories that I've got a new Brownie, but that was my first world.
Please
and,
don't.
That's and what was it? Yeah, I think the year after that was when Cam and I started doing Madisons together and we won a couple of worlds and stuff. But unfortunately, that's when they took the Madison out of the Olympics. So that was a kick in the pants. And then I went on the road, 2017. That's when I made the decision to come back to Oz and go 100% for the Olympics. It's, as you said, I haven't done it. This will be my first Olympics, so I had to give it 100% to make this team. so yeah, so far so good. A couple more days and we're on the plane to Tokyo.
Iffy.
Straighten that tie up, mate. You'll never get. You can't march in the bloody in the opening ceremony, mate, with a tie like that.
I'm rooming with Kel, and he's like, "Mate, can you help me with my tie?" And I said, "Do you know where I'm from, mate? I'm from Geelong. I don't know how to do a tie."
I've watched you from your youngest days, Lee, because being Geelong, I remember you as the juvenile delinquent when you were, you showed all the class to be. You were very good road and track, and so you looked to be headed for the Olympics very soon after that. It's hard to believe this is your first one, but congratulations on getting there, mate.
Yeah, thanks.
We've got some. You're right, Graham.
I'd have to say, if I actually was asked that question, I wouldn't have thought this was your first Olympics, actually.
That's been the response. Yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah. That's been the response from a few people. But yeah, as I said, it was an interesting path, and I finally made it. So here we are.
Well, Lee, how many gold do you reckon you'd already have in the kit bag if there was the Madison at the Olympics in that period?
Oh, mate. You can't ask an actor to get on the plane, Jesus. I'm going to refuse to comment on that one.
He's already answered the point.
On your brownie.
Hey, Lee, I want to ask you, obviously, I know Michael Hepburn pretty well, and, you know, it is very important chemistry in the, in that team pursuit. How tight is the bond between you and your brosefs?
It's interesting, actually. When I first come back, I was, well, I still am, actually. The old man, they've all gone off and done what they've done at Junior Worlds and bleached their hair, and I was the one that sat in the background and said, no, boys, there's absolutely no way you're getting me to dye my hair again. And they all went and done it and all that. But it is tight, you know. They are younger, but they've all grown up in the last 4 years and they're all young men. And a few of them are all heading off to Europe straight after the Olympics to start their careers on the road. And yeah, I think we've got really close. We've been the four of us now, plus a couple of the other young guys that have come in. But the four of us that competed at the Comm Games together, we've been team pursuiting together since 2017 now. End of 2016 is when I first started with them. And we've had that core four guys since then. So it's, we've done a lot of circles on the track following each other around in that time, that's for sure.
And how much aggro is in there? Because I know, geez, there's a lot with Heppy about smashing those bloody pumps.
Yeah, there's always that rivalry, eh?
It's thick.
Well, we'll see. They've got to come up to the mark. They haven't been there the last few years, but everyone knows what the pumps pull out on Olympic day, so you never discount them. But the Danes, they're the red hot favourites at the moment. So they're the ones we're looking to knock off the top step. But yeah, the Pommies, yeah, we'll never let them win again.
Mm. Good stuff, mate. Iffy?
We didn't, by the way.
No, I know you didn't. I just thought, I know Lee's got to go on to into a function now. So I just wanted to thank him heaps for coming on the show.
Yeah, and, don't think I dressed up like this just for you guys.
What? And good luck, mate. And make sure, wish all the boys the best. We'll all be.
That's what I'm looking for, mate.
That's it. Get a good look at those bad boys. Not just one, mate.
Thanks heaps, Lee.
Hey, good luck,
Lee. Thanks, guys. Catch ya.
Good on you, mate. Lee Howard, who's going to go out and smash it at Tokyo. And I'll tell you what, if he does, there's one guarantee, John, and that is it'll be a full-page spread in the Geelong Addy.
For sure. And he'll be back. He'll be back for the Bay Crits.
Yeah, you keep mentioning the Bay Crits. Hey, Graham, we asked Katie before, what was it like growing up in the Brown household? What were you like as the bigger bro? Were you the supportive brother or what?
Competitive. Yeah. I'm not going with complicated. I'm going with the other C. It's competitive. we're definitely in a very competitive household. I definitely remember doing laps of the clothesline in the backyard, trying to knock each other off. I won, of course, all the time. But yeah,
I actually remember doing laps in the backyard on your moped in Italy, and I won.
Yeah, but that's Italy. No. It doesn't matter. There's no competition in our household ever at all.
Graham, how tough is that journey to just become an Olympian, but then to not just? A lot of people said, you know, we're not just there for a tracksuit, we're there to perform. And then take that next step and realise that ultimate dream of being a gold medalist.
Yeah, I mean, the journey is obviously a really quite long one. For me, you know, I got the privilege of riding in Sydney, you know, home Olympics. I was from Sydney, I lived in Sydney. It was, you know, 20K away from where my mum and dad lived. And well, where Katie lives now still. And that was such an honour and obviously, you know, a long path. But getting the pathway through to Athens for me was like exceptionally tough because I'd torn my Achilles. So I had an Achilles injury. I wasn't even riding my bike. It was at the start of the year of the games. I did all my training in the swimming pool. I was Ian McKenzie was exceptional in, you know, the way he looked after me and said, okay, well, look, we need to do something different. We need to go, all right, we'll do your training efforts. The equivalent of what you would do on the track, we'll do it in the pool. So I trained my heart and, you know, my muscles obviously, but not, you know, my legs specifically like you would on the bike. So my heart and my lungs were getting the workout, but not the legs per se. So that whole lead up to Athens for me was literally, you know, for the 6 months leading in was like wake up, stretch, cotton wool, wrap myself in cotton wool, see the chiropractor, go train, wrap myself in cotton wool again, see the physio, train, wrap myself in cotton wool. And that was like a day in, day out for that whole period. So that's like another aspect of getting to that Olympic level and winning the golds. But, you know, I probably couldn't have done another kilometre at Athens. Did three rounds of the team's pursuit and world record pace. And then the Madison was just phenomenally fast. And went out that night with Stewie and I couldn't even celebrate. I was just that stuffed. And yeah, I think I had probably, which if you know me, you would probably think this is crap, but I probably only had three beers that whole night because I just couldn't. I was just so gone.
Yeah, that's crap.
we don't believe you. We don't believe
it. The absolute truth. I remember just, yeah, I was just so tired. And the next morning going to breakfast and I actually couldn't walk. My Achilles had just went poof, gone again. So that was I literally, in terms of my Achilles tendon, I timed it to a T. I got through Athens and then the night out and then that was it.
Cody, what are your memories of those Athens Olympics, like from a family perspective?
Yeah, it was pretty exciting, actually. I was in Europe at the time and my parents had gone over to see Graham race. And it was like because obviously in that era, funding for women's cycling wasn't exceptionally great. So my parents funded my sort of exercise quite extensively. Thank you, Mum and Dad. So for them to be able to make the journey to watch Graham race and win as well was really emotional for them and emotional for the rest of the family as well, because, you know, they've seen him put in that time and effort and just sort of go out of that.
It was emotional for me too because I didn't know they were coming.
Yeah, well, there you go. So it was a surprise. So, As a sister, as a sibling of an Olympian and a gold medalist Olympian, and being an athlete of my own, it's something to strive for as well. But it also is kind of like, damn you did it, sort of thing.
Hey, Graham, on the flip side, Graham, you know, there's a lot of talk about how tough it is for female cyclists, you know, with the conditions around wages and support, and Katie was just saying then, you know, funding and stuff. Was that tough knowing that you're in the same, like, sort of area, but they don't get near the support that the men's, you know, peloton get?
Yeah, well, definitely, at the time, my partner was a female cyclist, so I knew very well exactly what the scenario was. At the time, I was on basically a female cyclist wage as well, so I know really well. But yeah, I think things have changed a lot since then, obviously for the better. You've got a lot of the World Tour teams have, in men's World Tour teams have the women's World Tour teams as well, which is great. It's really good and, well, not good. It's excellent to see that, you know, you've got next year, you've got the Tour de France for the women. You've obviously you've got the women's Giro and all these world tour races and the women performing on the big level as well, which is, you know, something that hasn't really happened in the past. Well, it has.
Not to that level.
Not visibly.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, following that, though, I think we need to change the mind. Like, and I'm just going to advocate for women cyclists here. I think we need to change the mindset in not just thinking of them as women cyclists, but thinking of them as cyclists. Because I know, and then kind of making it sort of that, I guess, harmony between the two of them. And then COVID's done a wonderful thing to getting people on their bikes. They're all out and there's more women out there as well now. So, I mean, that is the one good thing out of COVID is that everyone's riding.
Take Mariana Voss. She's like one of the greatest bike riders in the whole world.
Amazing.
Ever.
Absolutely.
She's not just the greatest female. She's like one of the greatest bike riders ever. She's...
Yeah.
Her CV is as good as, if not, well, you know, it's up there with the best of the best of the best. So it's not it's not the best women cyclist, obviously she is, but the best of the best of everyone.
I think women's sport is on the improve everywhere as far as acceptance. You know, you look at footy back here, women's football, you know, beginning of last year, there was still a lot of guys knocking it. Now they're all starting to go, you know, actually, it's getting better. And women's cycling has been on the improve for a long time, but now quite a few of the men's teams sponsoring women's teams and paying the basic wage the same. It's not across the board, but you can see the change happening. And as you said, Graham, women's Tour de France next year. It's going to take another year or two, but it's wonderful to watch the improvement.
I heard I was reading somewhere about how Movistar women and men's team, when they celebrate a victory, it's not, we don't celebrate the men winning a race or the women winning a race. We all celebrate Movistar winning a race.
Graham, we obviously heard Katie talk about, you know, what it was like watching you in the Olympics, and you could feel a sense of pride, even though she was like, ah, bastard. But how proud are you of particularly your sister, you know, what she's had to go through and the person that she's become and the things that she's achieved?
Yeah, well.
Awkward. I mean,
now, I remember the moment that I got the phone call. Or, you know, I hadn't heard from her for a while. I knew she was in Germany, and that phone call I made, and it was like, what's happening? And that was just like that, one of those moments in your life when your heart just sinks, and it's like, oh, crap, oh, what do I do now? I'll go to the travel agent. This is obviously how it was a few years back. I go to the travel agency in Italy and book a flight and get there as quick as I can. And I was lucky that I wasn't that far away. Compared to my parents, so I could be there within a few hours, and then just see it. And, you know, I had my bike there because I was a professional at the time, but I couldn't train. There's no way on earth I could train. Just the girls in the hospital. Oh, geez. Yeah. Tough time.
Tough time. Yeah, but we talked with Katie, obviously, earlier about what has come out of obviously such a tragic event, but this whole campaign and foundation about raising awareness for, you know, rider safety. And there's obviously a lot more work to go, but it's obviously a topic that you must be quite passionate about yourself, given, you know, you've spent so many times out on the open roads.
Sorry, that just cut out for a second. I missed that.
I forgot what I just said. No, I just said it. Can you hear us? You there, mate? The detour of the old Wi-Fi. Yeah, the Wi-Fi.
I'm back again.
Can you hear me, mate?
Yeah, I'm back. WA is known as Wait a While. WA, it's not Western Australia. It's Wait a While. Our internet's not our best.
That's all right, mate. I was just saying, obviously, it was such a tragic thing, but to see what has come out of it and, you know, raising awareness, particularly through the Amy Gillett Foundation for drivers and cyclists on the road. It's obviously something that you're also quite passionate about, given how much time you've also spent on the open road.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, every time I ride my bike, you know, I've got a family. I've got four children, young children, obviously a wife. And it's just every time I go ride my bike, I just make sure that everything I can do to make sure I get home safe. You know, I mean, you can never depend on, you know, what a driver or another bike rider is going to do. So you just have to make sure you're always safe. And when I ride with my eldest boy, I say to this mate, the golden rule is always assume, doesn't matter if they look you in the eyes, always assume they haven't seen you, whether it's a walker, a bike rider, or a car. Now, that's the best advice I can possibly give. Always assume. You look at people and you think, they've seen me, that's cool, no worries, I'll go. Just always assume. I know you shouldn't assume, but always assume nobody's ever seen you. So in WA, we're blessed with a lot of bike paths. So, you know, I ride as much as I can off the road. So that just like lessens the chance of being hit, obviously, by a car, you know, immensely, obviously. And then, you know, every time I ride out on the road, I make sure I've got lights on. Even in the day, I've got the Cyclic Fly 6 and Fly 12 cameras. So at least in my mind, if something does happen to me, my family will then know. I mean, obviously, I don't want that to happen, but I will always have that information. And that's just, you know, covering myself and make sure I can protect myself and my family as much as I can. But yeah, it's very daunting, even thinking about going out in the road. And it's more so now with my children that are coming out riding with me now. It's like, crap, this is really dangerous out here. And I never really thought twice of it before. And now it's like, oh man, I don't like this at all.
Mm.
And as you guys touched on earlier, it's not about the motorist being at fault per se, or the bike riders at fault per se. It's just about, you know, everybody means something to someone, and it's just that awareness of everyone. And it's just such a frustrating situation in Australia. You know, I lived in Belgium, and man, if you knock the bike rider off in Belgium, you're in more strife than you poke stick at. But in Australia, you'd be the king of your local town if you knock the bike rider off. It's that stupid.
Okay, you're seeing since COVID, there's obviously been an explosion of bike sales. There's a plug for bikeexchange.com.au. But are we seeing a big uptake with people, you know, wanting to ride their bikes a lot more? Is this providing like a bigger opportunity?
Definitely. There has been a massive increase in people wanting to ride their bikes. The problem that we've come across is that 20 people a day are being hospitalized with serious injuries. So the uptake of people riding has now shown the data for how many hospitalizations we're actually having. You know, it's insane the amount of people. That's literally a cyclist dies every 10 days. That's where the separated bike lanes in WA are amazing, or the separated bike lanes where we really need to work on our governments and sort of say, hey, listen, you know, this is an area of need. How about we sort of let's get onto this. Let's look at our infrastructure. Let's try and create that change and make it safe for everybody.
Hey, Brownie, I noticed you cap GB coaching. You're obviously doing a bit over there in WA. What is some of the key messages you pass on to people that you're coaching?
In terms of safety?
Just in general, mate. Like, you know, how do you get the best out of them?
Look, I think the number one thing is to make sure you have fun. Now, I think I haven't been criticised per se, but sort of criticised in my career of maybe being a bit too lax in appearance. But that was more, I'm doing what I enjoy because it's a long career. I spent 15 years as a professional, and I enjoy the things that I do. So if I'm going to jump up a gutter because that's what I feel like doing, then that's what I do, because it's okay. In terms of safety, it's not the smartest thing to do, but it's about enjoying your job. If you don't enjoy your job, you're not going to be good at it. Mm. So that's the biggest thing that I can say is make sure you enjoy what you're doing. Make sure you don't take the fun aspect out of your training. You know, obviously there's a time and a place for everything. So make sure you're serious when you need to be serious, but enjoy yourself when you can enjoy yourself. That doesn't mean go out clubbing all night. That means enjoy yourself.
Oh, no.
Your
what?
I was going to say, if you're like, you the opposite.
Sorry, John.
You're too serious, John. You didn't enjoy yourself enough.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, I hear a lot of people talking about your coaching, Brownie, and one of them who's always singing high praises is Matty Keenan. He said you've turned him into an almost quick bike rider. So give yourself a plug. How do people get on board the Graham Brown coaching? You've got a website? What's the deal?
Well, I've got a website. Yeah, it's www.gbcoaching.com.au. I do my training on Training Peaks. Yeah, I coached Matty Keenan last year during the tour in the Giro. So it was it was a challenge in challenge for the general Joe Bloggs per se, you know, it's people that didn't have time. He had to do his commentating at night through to like 3, 4 a.m. in the morning. He had to spend time at home. He's obviously had his family, and then he had to ride his bike. We didn't have to ride his bike, but part of it was maximum of 1 hour per day for the 21 days of the tour, and let's see what we can do. So for me, I really enjoyed it because it was a really big challenge to make sure I improved him, because if I didn't, I look like an idiot. So the first goal was let's get him try to increase his FTP. All right, how do we do that in a 1 hour ride? So, you know, generally if you want to increase the FTP, you want to do, you know, work on a bigger base, and then what I like to say to people is think of your training as a building, okay? You've got a platform, which is your base, which is your Ks, right? The more Ks you can do, the bigger the base, right? This is your form. The bigger the building you want, the bigger the base you have to have. That's engineering 101, I guess. And if you go form or, you know, efforts and too much of this without any of this, it falls over. And that's best way you can kind of describe it. So I had to sort of tether on the working high-intensity efforts.
Mate. Trademark that, because someone's going to steal that bloody PowerPoint presentation.
It's very true, though. It's very true.
It is. True. I don't write and it impressed me.
I was forever not doing enough of the foundation, going too high and falling over. It happened to me all the time.
Mm. Yeah, well, I've seen quite a few people like Ryan with do the same thing. So that was the obviously with Keenan only doing an hour at a time, that the possibility of that tower falling was pretty high. But we had to just like keep it on the edge and just see how it goes. And you know, obviously with Zwift, I could go on, watch him ride, so I could follow him on Zwift, watch him, and FaceTime him so I could actually see his avatar and his power, and I could see his face at the same time. So it was pretty amusing.
We could talk to you guys for hours on end, and it's been absolutely fantastic to have you on the Detour podcast. Before we go, have you paid much attention to the build-up for the Olympics, and do you have any sort of red-hot tips in terms of who you think's going to perform and get gold? I'll start with you, Katie.
Yeah, I pay attention to the women's road race a little bit, which, I mean, it's pretty spectacular. They're climbing 2,600 metres over the whole course, 137 kilometres. And the first 3K is probably – the first 60K is at 3%. So – I think on the last climb, which is 37 kilometres into the finish, it will be really interesting to watch. But I'm assuming that the Dutchies may get up with obviously the Dutchies team with Voss, they want to kind of set her up, I'd say, for a sprint if no one gets away early. So, but the other thing is the AGF actually has Sarah Gigante, who's doing the time trial, and she is an ambassador for the AGF. Just another plug for the AGF, by the way. and she also was a scholarship holder. So it's an amazing opportunity, the footing that the Amy Gillett Foundation gave Sarah, in the way that, you know, we look at young talent and that need, that step up and helping them with their education, because she's extremely bright as well. So that's sort of I guess if you're a young talent and you need some help, just touch base with us and try and put in an application for your scholarship, for a scholarship, as Sarah has. But yeah, I would say Van der Breggen or Van Vleuten or Voss. But I mean, Spratty's going pretty well too. She had a big crash in the Giro, so might be a little bit of a difficulty.
You know what that scholarship did? It helped build the base. That's very important. Very important. What do you reckon?
The peak in the tower.
The peak, so it doesn't fall over. Graham.
The scholarship. Yeah, keep working on the peaks.
That's it. Now, Graham, who has the base? And
we lost internet again.
Oh, he's lost internet. You're back.
Oh, wait. I'm back again.
Yeah.
Just wait a while. WA's wait a while, remember.
Graham, who has the base and the form that won't topple over to take out the goal?
Well, I'd like, let's start with the men's time trial. Roman Dennis is a good mate of mine. I'd like to see him, especially after Rio. He's been through a fair bit. I mean, yeah, everyone has their own opinion of what he's been through and what he's done over the last few years. But unless you know the real story, I mean, it doesn't really matter. I'd love to see him get up there and get a gold. I do tease him quite often with this, just to make sure he has his head in line. And then he just turns back and says, "You don't have a yellow jersey from the Tour de France." But anyway, I'm like, "All right, you win. Fair enough." In the road race, in all honesty, you know, obviously we want Aussies to get up and win. That's we all be yelling at the screen going, you know, come on Aussie. But what's happened in the tour, you've got Wout van Aert and Tadej Pogacar, who have just been phenomenal. And it's, again, they've gone 3 weeks and they go really deep, and Wout van Aert set a benchmark. Well, history, he's only been the third rider ever to win a mountain time trial and a sprint stage behind Merckx and Hino. So that sort of feat is like, it's pretty exceptional. If, you know, another week or so later, can he do that again? Well, I mean, you would have to say yeah, because he's just a phenomenal athlete. Can he do time trial with road race? I don't see why he can't, because he's just a freak. But yeah, it's Pogacar, the way he rides as well. It's a tough course. I mean, as a betting man, which I'm not, I do like dollar bets. Well, I guess I am a betting man, but I do dollar bets, not $100 bets. So it's not something you want to follow me. I generally lose. But you always go for the Aussies. If I had to pick a winner, I'd have to go Wout van Aert, unfortunately, and then Rowan for the time trial.
No, that's some good tips there,
for the women's road race, Van der Breggen, and Spratty for second.
All right. Well, or hopefully
vice versa would be better, but yeah.
Yeah. Before I let you guys go, I'll just run through a couple of quick comments. Tom Maloney says, get back to my unfinished comment before. I agree with Katie. We all have to change and be part of that change. Yes, Graham, look motorists in the eye, etc. when you can. Bruce Wilson says, I remember riding a motorcycle in Portugal years ago and scarring brown. So do you know who Bruce Wilson is? No. We'll get on to that later. Wendy Superfan, there's an uptake of cyclists that are not joining clubs to learn the basic rules of on and off the road. So Wendy wants people to join clubs. Today says,
totally agree with that.
Everyone means something to someone. Excellent thought to take us on the road. And Samantha in says, by the way, that bike is sensational. Obviously talking to you, Brownie. And YouTube Chaos says, you're a legend, Brown Dog. So he's talking...
I just mentioned that the bike has aged a lot better than the bloke in front of it, I reckon.
What a way to finish with a clip.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, we really appreciate you being on the Detour Podcast. It's fantastic chat, and, you know, we'll check in again soon for sure. And keep up the great work, Katie, and Iffy coughing a lung up there. Yeah, thanks for being on the show. And we'll check in, and we're going to have some prizes, I think, to give out at the Vuelta, Iffy, with the Amy Gill Foundation.
So Katie has very, very kindly offered us some free entries into the Amy Gill ride, which is a wonderful ride down here, not far from my place, down the Great Ocean Road ride. What are you putting your hand up for, Brandon? You want to win it?
Can I get one?
You want to ride, do you?
Actually, tomorrow morning I'm going to my very first Grand Fondo, so Amy's can be my second.
Well, there you go.
Let's talk off screen.
Just keep he's building the base, folks. He's building the base.
Yeah. He's laying the foundation.
Amy's Grand Fondo is an absolute classic of a race ride. And so if people who haven't done it, so we're going to come up with a really good little competition over the next few weeks as how people can win that. So I'll fine-tune that with you down the track, Katie.
Yep.
No Sounds worries. Good.
Thanks for joining us, guys. We really appreciate
Thanks for
it.
Having
we'll
us.
Check in again soon.
Yeah. Thanks for
appreciate
having me.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
See you, guys. See Fantastic to catch up. Bye.
Katie and Graham Brown, we better go to a quick word from our great mates at Bike Exchange, Iffy.
We better.
Look at this bike. You think it's just a bike, right? But it's not. It's a bike. 374 people are looking at this guy, this girl, them, all looking at it. People from here, there, and wherever this is. People that are looking for a bike. Or just a piece of it. Amateurs, semi-amateurs, and pro-amateurs. This guy wants this bike, but with this crank and these bars. This could be the perfect match. But not this one. This girl has a bike to sell, and thousands of people might purchase it. Eyes on Bikes help grow small businesses. His, hers, yours, and the latest data and insights help those businesses keep moving. We are the world's number one bike marketplace, with over 500,000 products and 900 brands, where buyers and sellers are brought together in a place where a bike is never just a bike. Bike Exchange, where the world buys, sells, learns, and rides.
Thanks again to our great mates at Bike Exchange. And Iffy, we've still got a lot to get through because we've had a chat with Scott McGorry earlier today, and also George Bennett gave us some insights on the road race circuit on the Social Distance Podcast. Now, there is a bit of swearing on the show, so I've had to get the old bleep button out. But
yeah,
it's pretty
all by you.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm not proud of it. But it's a different show altogether. So I've bleeped it out. But here's George Bennett's insight on the road race at Tokyo.
How am I feeling? Yeah, feel good. I don't know. It's just, how do you tell? Do you? You know.
And it's a one day race, eh? Like it's so different, you know. Like
you only got like everything's going well. There's nothing to say. Nothing to say. Like you know, like it's all been a smooth run. Let's say so. Like. Oh, you just got to hope for a good day, don't you? Hope that everything's right. Hope the tactics right, everything like that. So much can go wrong. But
what's the circuit like? Where are you going? I haven't looked at any of it. Is it going up Mount Fuji or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you come back down, go around the racetrack. That's the only thing I like knew before coming here was from playing Gran Turismo, Mount Fuji circuit.
Oh yeah,
the last climb's real hard, isn't it? Like 10% for 7K or something.
Actually, me and Paddy rolled out day one, just got off the plane. Like, oh, I made this loop on Strava without looking like at the profile, and I was like, oh, this looks cool. There's like a little lake up there, right around there. And we were riding, we're like, this climb's pretty steep. Got to the top after like you know, 24 hours of travel, just rooted, like, and then we're climbing, just got steeper and steeper and steeper. Come back to the hotel, and we're like, oh, wait, that was the final climb. Accidentally did it day one off the plane. And yeah, it's steep, it's hard. It's also really hot.
How long is it, that climb? Like in minutes, like 30 minutes or?
Nah, like the hard bit's like 18 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's plateau on the top. So it's like we've got to, like, it's going to be like, yeah, you can drop welt and stuff, but can you drop by enough, you know? Like, if he's just dangling off the back, you're in trouble.
Mate, but who's gonna ride with him? Like, let's say you're away. Like, let's say you're away with Pogacar and Roglic at the top of the climb, and then you've got Van Aert is like 30 seconds behind in a group, say of like three or four other guys. Are you gonna ride if you're with Van Aert?
I guess you lose the race if you don't.
Yeah, I guess the Olympics is different too, because you're actually, like, to get third at the Olympics is still something, because you get a medal. Whereas, like, in the other race, you either win or you don't. But, like, the Olympics, it's still worth riding for third to get the medal.
Mate,
the
1 minute advice I'll give you, George, you have to get in the break of the day, because the Olympics are fucked at getting organized at the back, mate. I'm telling you. Like, it's a shit show. The break of the day, most of the time, will be there at the pointy end.
If we're in for a bad day or whatever, and it doesn't go well, like, say you're out the race, you crash or something happens or whatever, and you're sitting on the sideline, I would love to watch the break of the day go to the line. It'd be, you know, you can imagine, like,
it'd be so good, eh?
But remember this. Okay, let's think about your brand, GB, as I hold up my Vicks inhaler. The Kiwis, the time zone, is perfect for the first time in a long time.
So the boys have all told me it's 2 p.m. Saturday, so there's various groups.
So lots of Kiwis are going to be watching. You've got to think about all those people in New Zealand watching. Get in the fucking break of the day, and then all social media lights up. We've got a Kiwi in the break. It spreads. Fuck it, man. Like, then when, you know, the road race finishes, say it doesn't work out, you'll get so much fucking press on the back of being in the break. And if you get caught and you get piped away, who cares? It's about TV time.
Yeah. And knowing George like we do, that's exactly what he's after.
Yeah. Publicity. TV time. It's all about the marketing.
Love it.
Think of all the interviews you could do, George. Straight after the race, just fucking non-stop. You have to get someone to book a ball in.
Hang out in the mix zone for half an hour after the race.
Yeah.
Like, talking sounds to like New Zealand Herald, Sky Sport.
Oh,
stuff.
Mate.
Stuff.co.nz, Rotorua Daily Post.
I was going to win and crash myself, so I wouldn't have to go through that.
Superman into the gutter. Oh, getting some great feedback from that, Iffy. Great Divide's absolute potty mouth.
I'm sure it was a lot funnier without the beeping. It would have been hilarious. But anyway.
Yeah, well. Now, as we said, we caught up with our man on the ground for the Olympics, Scott McGorry, who's Olympic gold medalist, as you know, and Olympic commentator for Channel 7. He's part one of the interview with him earlier today. Righto, it's time to do our Olympic road race preview, Johnny, with our Olympic expert and Olympic gold medalist, Scott McGorry. Scooter, first day of, what was it, rehearsals today for the commentary team?
Yeah, it did rehearsal. So we've set up in Melbourne, temporary studio, but you can imagine for the entire Olympic program for Channel 7 and all the different commentary teams that we have for all the different sports, it's a pretty big undergoing, and they've got all these different commentary little pods like the one I'm in now, and we've just been testing today along with Anna Mears and Phil Liggett in London just all the links and how things are working, the buttons, and be able to talk to and from directors and producers and people that are on the ground, just making sure that everything is working smoothly. These are the days to iron out all the little issues so they don't pop up on race day, so we can make sure we broadcast everything the best we can.
I can detect already the way Scotty's speaking. He's already taken it to that next, what's the word? Eloquent, what? You know what am I looking for, John? That next level. You sounded sharp.
The next level.
Eloquent.
He was eloquent. dialed into commentary mode. I tell you, look, I have met, you know, there's a guy that, that, you know, when you see all the different TV shows, whether it's Survivor, we've been watching with Baden Cook or all these other shows, and you have, you know, that voiceover for all the ads, you know, like this week on Australian television, the biggest, you know, that stuff. I've met that guy. And I actually got him to do a prize draw, an event I was hosting. It was fantastic. I'm not quite at that level. So there is another level or several levels I could get to.
But, you don't want to go there, mate. You don't want to go there. I've got a question for you before we get into the Olympics on that, because you were when you were telling me last couple of weeks about the challenges you had with where you being in Melbourne and some being in Sydney and then Phil being in London, there was this different seconds of delay. So you had to sort of stagger it so it all came together. Did it all come together?
Yeah. They've got all that sorted. So we had a good chat with Phil. We rehearsed the Madison because obviously that's a technical race and he's over there and I'm here. So we went through the 2016 Madison World Championships, which I hadn't actually seen the footage of that. That was won by Wiggins and Cavendish, and it was a thrilling race. Actually, I knew what the winning team was, but we just got the start list and then started calling it, and that was an amazing race actually to watch, even though it was from a few years ago. And we also went through the road race from Rio. So I'm feeling a little bit, you know, down and out at the moment because I just watched Richie Porte crash out of the Olympic Games from Rio again. And by the way, spoiler alert, Nibali on his way to a gold medal, he also crashed. So that's what we were just going through then, the footage from 5 years ago now at the Rio Olympics. But, everything worked well. Phil, he's on the money. You know, he's got the sound, he's got the voice, he's got the experience, ironed out just a couple of little of the issues, and we'll be good to go on Saturday. Looking forward to an amazing race and listening to, for an Australian audience, hearing Phil's voice again because, you know, obviously he's not commentating the Tour de France for Australia anymore, but he's back on the Olympics. So it'd be great to have Phil on board.
I said earlier, like, I'd be happy to be an Olympic athlete just for the kit. By the looks of things, they've given you some kit, mate. How much kit do you get being part of the commentary team?
Well, this is not preempted. Well spotted. So far, I have this cap and a pair of ASICS shoes.
That's all right.
Yeah,
they're good at they Kayanos.
Yeah, cool. No, I'm not sure what brand they are, what model they are, but I did take a photo of them and send them through to my 18-year-old daughter, and she was like, oh, my God, have they got a size 9? You know, she wants a pair, so they must be okay. They're probably way too cool for me because my 18-year-old thinks they're great, so we'll see how we go. But I haven't got anything else yet. We'll get some shirts and things like that, but it's the athletes that get the kit. They get suitcases full of stuff. It's amazing what they get. Most of what you get, though, like in terms of, and Johnny knows this, especially Johnny knows this because he got his blazer from the 1972 Olympics in Munich, and that is the worst blazer of Olympic history. Is you just wouldn't wear it again unless it was an Olympic function, and that's typically the same for all the clothing that the athletes get, except for the tracksuits, T-shirts, and all the sporting stuff. That's all pretty cool. But, you know, the dress attire and the opening closing ceremony clothing, normally you wear it once and once only.
Now, I'll tell you what I got in the mail today, Scotty. You must have got, I don't know, there it is, my Australian Olympian's Oath.
Oh, there you go. In the post. Well,
yeah, in the post. Do not
it may have been sent to me. It may have been sent to me, but they probably wouldn't have been able to find me. That would be the problem. I'm not sure what address they're using these days because that's changed a few times in the last couple of years.
Anyway, it's very nice. It was very nice. Anyway, fire away, Dan.
Road race. Let's get straight into it. The men's road race. We've got a profile here, which is the top one is the road race course and the bottom's obviously the time trial circuit. What's your thoughts on, firstly, the profile itself? Let's start with the road race. And who do you think are going to be some of the big contenders?
Yeah, this is going to be really interesting, isn't it? Because the last, say, 18 months or so, obviously we've had to deal with the COVID pandemic and the challenges that has brought up. And it's sort of no different still because of what's happened with the Tour de France. Now, this is a super tough course. So the actual elevation gain in this course is 100 metres more than the highest of the Tour de France, which is the Mont Ventoux stage where they went twice over Ventoux. So this is harder, more elevation than that. 236 kilometres, I think it is, fairly flat to start with, but then it's just up or down, so as you can see. And then you've got that really steep Mikuni Pass towards the end, an incredible launching pad for the best climbers before getting into the finish. So this is a climber's course. We also said that about Rio. And, you know, as I said, we were just looking at the footage that not long ago, and it was Nibali and Aru and Rafa Michael and these guys in front, but it was won by a classic specialist in Greg Van Avermaet. I'm just not sure if it's going to be the case this time. I think that last climb is too steep, too long for that type of rider to get away with it. Now, that said, we've got Wout van Aert as a classic specialist that probably will get over that hill. So, you know, I think he comes in as one of the favourites for it. The turnaround from the Olympic, from the Tour de France to the Olympics, that's going to be a big challenge for all the riders. We know the ones that came out of it well, like Van Aert, but we also know that he got on a plane a couple of hours after winning the final stage and then started his trip to get to Tokyo. He was pretty tired when he got here. 1 week to recover, less than a week, basically, to recover. We don't know. It's so unpredictable. You know, riders like Nibali still in the mix. It's going to be really exciting, and it's hard to pick a favourite because of the variables that we've just seen over the last couple of months.
And what do you think for the time trial?
It looks lumpy, doesn't it? So you can see in the road course at the above, between the middle and the end, that little section of little bumps there, that's the circuit that they're going to be riding the time trial on. And it's not particularly for the big motors like a Filippo Ganna. He's also riding the Team Pursuit, so he's had to put a little bit of extra time into track training recently. And that, you would think, would hinder him on the uphill sections in the time trial course. But he's just such a powerful rider, you don't know. And Rowan Dennis can get over a hill. We saw him do that at the Giro so well last year in riding for his teammate Theo Gegenhardt. So, look, you know, Rowan Dennis, I think, should be able to do well on this type of circuit. You know, he's focused on it, unlike some of the other riders that have come off the Tour de France. So, yeah, again, it's not one that the pure time trialists will really enjoy, but with those little uphill sections in it. And I think Rowan's got a really good chance of getting a medal. I think it's 12 months on from his best chance, which I think he was in better time trial form last year. But, yeah, we'll see how we can turn up, you know, come up to it 12 months on.
And Wout van Aert has got to be a chance in this one too.
He has, isn't he? So he could go away with two gold medals and get the double. Now, that's only happened once before, and it wasn't in the men's. That was in 2000. Luitin Zylard van Morsel won the women's road race and the women's time trial, and she backed that up with a gold medal on the track as well in the individual pursuit. So he'll be making history if he does do that, be the first man to win the time trial and the road race at the same Olympics. But you're going to bet against him. You know, he really has shown some great form, and he has beaten Filippo Ganna in a time trial this year. That was at Trino Adriatico, you know, back in March. So he has got form against the man that we were talking about as the favourite for the time trial. But maybe it's Wout that's going to come away with the double.
That was part one of our chat with Scotty McGrory. Now, the Wheel Wizard, he obviously loves commenting on a lot of our stuff, and, you know, he was quite the weatherman for a while there. But, geez, he's got the one wood out, Iffy. And in the spirit of fairness and running not always positive comments, he's opened the batting and he says, had the misfortune to see the Social Distance podcast yesterday. The only good thing was with George Bennett. Glad you beat the unnecessary swearing. Ooh, and then he's got Dan. No Olympic road race has been won by the early break. It was won by someone that joins the break. Closest was Bettini, who joined the EB and rode away to win a two-up sprint. And he thinks Belgium for the road race, they have a five-man team with two domestiques, especially to chase. Now, what I have to say to the Wheeled Wizard is, where are you going to be if the breakaway gets to the line and wins this edition in Tokyo? You're going to be on your little keyboard and you're going to go, oh, sorry, Dan, I was wrong. The bloody breakaway got away. Mate, let's wait and see.
I'll back the Wheel Wizard. I'll back the Wheel Wizard.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm pretty keen to wrap this show up. Part two, Scotty McGrory. Here we go. All right, let's have a look at the women's circuit now for both the road race and the time trial. Starting with the road race, it obviously doesn't look as hard as the men, but there's a couple of little nasty climbs in the middle there.
Yeah, there is, and you know, look, I'm a little bit disappointed in the fact that the women are doing the same start, and I understand the logistics about having both races, they're on separate days, but both races starting at the same location. I kind of get the logistics of that, but this is massive. the money that gets put into an Olympic Games, I feel that they should have pushed the women's start further along the course so that they actually have those really hilly sections at the end of it. So it sort of matches the way the men's race will come down to a finale. Regardless, that hasn't happened, so they have what they have. There's a lot of talk about just the strength of the Dutch team. They've got a full contingent of four riders. Any one of them could win it. So it may be a race of, you know, which of the Dutch riders attacks first, because the other three are going to have to defend whoever attacks first. So it could be more of a race between themselves to be in the winning move before anyone else from their own team gets the jump on them. So and whether everybody else can play off that, you know, and maybe take advantage of the Dutch in fighting. I'm not suggesting that there's disharmony within the team, but yeah, they're just so strong that, you know, any one of them could win it. And that may be the one thing that other teams can play off.
I was reading today that Simon Jones, the Australian coach, was saying they've got a plan to offset the Dutch dominance. I'd love to know what that plan is. But the interesting, it's still got 2,600 and something metres of climbing. So it's still pretty hard. What's 2,700 metres of climbing. So it's no walk in the park, even without the climbing of Mount Fuji. So it'll be a fantastic race. Fantastic to see how Gracie Brown can match it up with Amanda Spratt against the Dutchies. It'll be a fantastic race.
Yeah, and look, Spratty's had great form in the World Championships the last couple of years, hasn't she, picking up medals. She hasn't shown scintillating form this year, and then she had the crash, as did Grace in the Giro as well leading up to this. So, you know, hopefully they've both bounced back, freshened up a bit, and they're in good form now. And it's a little bit different with the women compared to the men in that, you know, in an Olympic year, obviously the road race for the men is very important. And we saw that by riders pulling out of the Tour de France before getting to Paris just to focus on the Tour. But for the women, it's far more important. This is absolutely everything for them in an Olympic year. So maybe Spratty has been able to put a little bit more focus on going for the Games rather than the pre-race, you know, the events in the last couple of months. Not completely sure, but let's just, you know, fingers crossed that has been the case. And then in the time trials, look, Grace Brown fifth at the World Championships last year. She was third in that mountain time trial at the Women's Giro, you know, not that long ago as well. She's in good time trial form and continuing to improve. Remember, late to the sport, came from athletics. So every year she's getting better and better. And then Sarah Gigante, where is she at? She broke a leg a few months ago. She's back, been training hard, and she's an incredible time trialer and a brilliant climber, but we just don't know how she's come back from injury as well. So a bit of a mixed bag of, you know, broken bodies and within the women's team to see, you know, who's actually back on form. And probably the same for Lucas Hamilton in the men's team as well, coming back from dislocating his shoulder at the Tour de France. So hopefully he's back in fine form as well.
With the women's road race, obviously Annemiek van Vleuten would be hurting still. You know, she should have been Olympic champion at Rio, crashed out on that sort of final descent there. She didn't do the Giro to prepare just for the road race. And you're talking about the Dutch team. Is she considered one of the big favourites for the road race?
Well, absolutely. We saw how she won perhaps one of the most, you know, incredible victories at a World Championships, you know, over 100-kilometre solo attack a couple of years back. So the thing is that she is perhaps slightly left of the rest of that Dutch team. So Anna van der Breggen and the rest are, they're probably a little bit more of a unit, with Annemiek slightly off to the side. She sort of doesn't conform to the norm within that team. And she's been doing a lot of altitude training. You know, she basically lives at altitude. So she went off to do her own preparation to get ready for this. So definitely one of the favourites on paper. You couldn't bet against her. But it's likewise with Anna van der Breggen. You couldn't bet against her either. So they do have, in a very small team, two riders that are more than capable of destroying the field. So it is going to be really interesting to see how the Dutch play it. And I'm like you, John. I'd like to know what Simon Jones's tactics and the rest of the team's tactics and thoughts are on how they're going to get the better of such a strong unit, even if there's only a few of them.
It's interesting. You touched on one thing before, Scotty. You talked about how the Dutch would play it, you know, whether the inner tactics might work against them. But they've been amazingly strong in sticking together over the years. You know, they've dominated these worlds and Olympics for quite a while, and they've never broken that pact. You know, one goes up, they don't chase. They just don't do it, even though it could be a gold medal for the other. But, so they do ride very much as a team.
Yeah, they do. You're right. So, you know, maybe this is the time that someone that's missed out a few times or someone like Anna Meek thinks, well, hang on, you know, I missed out last time. And, you know, it's one of those, it's an iffy story, isn't it? You know, shoulda, woulda, coulda. But she tried to take a right-hand corner on the right-hand side of the road downhill at speed. It was never going to happen, and it was a horrific crash. Definitely would have ridden on to win, and Nibali probably the same. You know, if he hadn't crashed in the men's race, he probably would have gone on to win as well. But you've got to finish the line, cross the line first, haven't you? And neither of them did that. So yeah. I'm sure Anna Meek is hurting. You know, you're right, Dan. This one would be, you know, begging, you know, her to come back and try and win something. But Anna van der Breggen's going to retire at the end of this season as well. So she'd love to go out on a high. And let's just hope that, you know, Spratty and co can come away and get the better of all of them.
If I was Anna Meek, bug him, my teammates. He'd go for gold. Flick him.
Yeah.
I wouldn't give a shit.
Yeah. Flick. Well, this could be a case of, you know, that's the old, like, you know, the old European system of flick before you flicked. So
yeah, because, you know, like, if you can pull off the flick and you get the gold medal, they can't criticise you. You're still on the podium and go, hey, we did it. High five.
Greg LeMond did it in a world title. He chased his teammate down, cost him a world title, very likely. Yeah.
Just on the time trial circuit, what are your thoughts on that? 22K, obviously a bit shorter than the men's. It's a bit of a
lap. It's the same circuit. Same the men circuit. Do two laps. One lap gets two laps. Yeah,
which is a bit short. Like, I've got to say, but, you know, logistics and where the roads are, et cetera, but it is a bit short for the women, in my opinion. But, again, it's still got some rolling hills in it, so it won't be easy. And it's the same two that are the favourites. It's Anna Meek and Anna, the two Dutchies that are the best time trialists, you know, on paper in the race. You know, it's whether, you know, Grace and Sarah can really match it with them. And this is the first time that we get to see Sarah, you know, at this sort of level. Still such a young rider, but we just know how well she time trials. The question is, has she recovered? Has she been able to train enough after breaking her leg earlier this year? She is so resilient. She's done so many injuries to herself in her young career, but always shown the tenacity and the willpower to train through that, get on the home trainer, bang out the hours and hours and the kilometres of training, you know, on a stationary bike, and came out flying. So has she been able to do enough of that this time? We're going to have to wait till next week.
It's going to be interesting.
I can remember when I got the two of them into the Lexus of Blackburn team in the Bay Crits.
And, what team was that? Which one was it again?
Lexus Blackburn.
Oh, that one.
And I remember saying to Andrew, he said, who's this young girl? I said, don't you worry about this. I've heard of that Amanda Spratt. She's one of the best in the world. I said, yeah, but don't you worry. This young girl is going to be the best in the world.
Just another rider if he's discovered. They just keep stacking them up.
Thank you so much, mate.
That was part two of the chat with Corey. Crack myself up, John. The Wheel Wizard. I'll tell you what, it's on. The Skull, he just said, you tell him, Dan. The Wheel Wizard ain't going to happen. He's talking about the break. Now, I'll tell you what, for the road race, this is the first time it's ever happened. I am just going for the breakaway. I don't care about countries. If the break gets to the line and wins the gold, oh, I'll look like a genius. If not, I'll just have to block all the comments from the Wheel Wizard the next episode. We've got one more part, and it's the Scotty wrapping things up with any goss in the Olympics, and he gives us a bit of an insight for the BMX. Before I let you go, Scooter, any inside goss on Olympic news? Obviously, there's a scandal in the equestrian with the rider testing positive for cocaine, and that's thrown a spanner in the works. Obviously, with the COVID situation as well, we spoke to George Bennett on the social distance potty, and it is just like a bubble with all the road riders in the one hotel. So, which is, you know, what other choice have they got? But at the same time, geez, if a bloody sniffle or a bit of mucus goes astray in the lobby, she'll set the joint up like a bonfire.
Yeah, we won't. And it's the challenge. I'm sure there's going to be more of these situations, perhaps, and hopefully not more of the cocaine issues. But, I imagine COVID's going to, you know, upset someone's dreams in whatever sports it may be. You know, you test positive for that and, you know, and you're out of the games. And you might not even feel that bad, you know, when you have it, as we know, with this particular, you know, disease, so or illness. So yeah, but the cocaine situation, you know, I'm a bit bemused by all of that. And apparently she is claiming that, you know, like in the past we've had athletes say that their coach gave them stuff and it was not their responsibility. But, you know, each athlete has, you know, the responsibility of what goes in their body, even though she is claiming that it was given to her by the horse.
Is it she or he?
Oh, he. I'm not sure. No, it may not be over. So, yeah, I think he claims it was the horse gave it to him. It wasn't his stuff at all.
Yeah. It baffles me because, like, there's some sad stories already. Like, I think you were telling me if he was at the shooter from the UK who was the red-hot favourite for the gold and tested positive on the flight or when they arrived, you'd think you'd be doing everything you can to make sure that, you know, you're not going to have your dreams pulled away from you. And then to hear a story like that, it's like, well, anyway, what can you do? All right, well, thanks for the update, Scooter. We'll just keep pestering you, mate, and whenever we can get some time to pre-record, sweet, and keep rocking that Channel 7 cap, mate. It's going to be a great couple of weeks.
Yeah, I will, mate. This is going to – well, it actually keeps my head warm as well because, as you know, there was hair there that used to do that job, so I need to have a cap on.
We look forward to when you can fill in between the shoes and the hat with all the rest of the Channel 7 Olympic gear.
Well, I should have just come on with the gear that they've given me, which is just the cap and the shoes. And
It is very much like those hats they wear at the footy, you know, when they're selling hot pies, cold drinks, chocolate bars.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, mate. Thanks.
No, it's a pre-record. We can cut that out.
No, of course you wouldn't, though.
No.
All good, mate. Guys, we're looking forward to it. We can talk about all the other stuff coming up, but, you know, we talk, you know, obviously the first thing that is put to me is, you know, who's our best medal chances? You know, what are we going to win gold in, you know, if at all? And we know how difficult it is in the road races to, you know, and the level of competition and the odds against so many riders that you're racing against. The track, obviously, with more gold medals on offer, and the men's team pursuit is going to be an incredible competition once we get down to that. There are five nations that are in the mix. We've been used to just GB versus Australia, but you've got to throw in the Italians now. The Danes are the world record holders and world champions. The Swiss are pretty strong as well. The Kiwis are flying. That's going to be a great competition. But I think the BMX is where we'll probably get our best chances. Seiya Sakakibara, it's going to be an incredible story with her. She's half Japanese. Tokyo Olympic Games, you know, her brother was supposed to be at the Games with her and he crashed out, you know, terribly last year and had some very, life-altering injuries and some brain damage from that. And then you've got our BMX freestylers. We've got the current world champion in Logan Martin. So I think, you know, that's probably where our best chances lie in the first time that, you know, freestyle's been in the Games. So, you know, there's so much to look forward to, that's for sure, in the next couple of weeks.
Mate, it's going to be awesome.
Thanks,
can't wait. Mate. Thanks, mate. We'll speak to you soon.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, mate. That was Scotty McGrory, our Olympic expert. It's been a massive episode. I think the longest ever episode we did was with Adam Hansen. It ticked over 2 hours, but it's always when we say, all right, short and sharp, let's just keep it punchy tonight, and then bang, an hour 40. There you go.
Yeah, well, there you go. Now, I have to offer some apologies to our wonderful viewers and listeners. Today, I was supposed to come up with some prizes that are actually due. So next episode, I will deliver.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll just keep flooding episodes throughout the Olympics because next week we've got all the track stuff firing up and we're obviously going to be watching that pretty closely with Lee Howard and the team pursuit and all the chances with the women's team as well. So there's going to be plenty of stuff to talk about and we're going to be building up obviously to the Tour of Spain. When does that start? That's going to be 4 weeks, isn't it?
No, it's only less than 3 weeks.
Oh, jeez.
I think it's 3 weeks from Saturday, from tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Well, there's going to be plenty of detours to come. As we always say, tell your mates, do us a favor, youtube.com/thedetourpodcast. Like, share, subscribe. We're on Apple, iTunes, all the platforms. Really appreciate your support. And thanks again to Katie and Graham Brown. Thanks to Lee Howard. Thanks to Scotty McGrory. It was a fantastic show. And also get behind the Amy Gillett Foundation as well, amygillett.org.au. They're doing fantastic stuff. And, it was fantastic insights from Katie earlier in the show, Iffy.
I think it's all fantastic.
Yep, fantastic. All right, well, we'll see you soon. Good luck to all the riders in the road race, and hopefully a breakaway gets to the line.